So JD spent the last two Wednesday nights kicking off our class on apologetics. He covered a lot of good foundational introductory stuff, and so I got to cut a lot of that out of the stuff that I was planning to do. So we're going to dive right into it. So JD's going to have kind of a mix of topics across four classes. My four are going to be focused on the age of the earth, and then Mark's got four classes on the Bible and how we got it and how it was transmitted and some things like that. So, age of the earth, that's a pretty cool picture. I like looking at that. These first two lessons on age of the earth, we're really going to spend a lot of time soaking in evidence, soaking in perspectives. And then, first, the biblical perspective. Second, what I'm titling or terming mainstream science's perspective on the age of the earth. And then the third, so we'll have that this week and next week. And then I'll be gone for 2 weeks, so you get 2 weeks to marinate on all that and do your homework for the third lesson, which will be looking at challenges to the mainstream science view of age of the earth. And then the fourth lesson, we'll look at biblically faithful approaches to Genesis. And wow, is there a spectrum of biblically faithful approaches to Genesis. It's pretty interesting. So that's where we're headed. Why does our view on the age of the earth matter? Why are we even studying this? You look like you're going to say something. Angel?
Our universe and world got here.
Okay. As in creation, how we got here.
God says that he created the world in 6 days. And it wasn't 6 days, then the Bible has a problem.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest reason in my mind is if the Bible takes a position on this is how the earth was created, this is when the earth was created, that's a stance. And if all the evidence shows that that's incorrect, well, then the Bible has credibility issues. Anything else? What else?
That if you want to try to believe all the rest of the Bible except the first five pages, that seems pretty hypocritical.
And as we'll see as we get into this a little bit, the creation is referenced in other places in the Bible too. So it's not even just cutting out the first couple of chapters. It's other things too. Okay. Joel?
Attempts to water down and diminish God's power. And if that's true, then the references to his power in redeeming us and reconciling us don't have as much force, because his creating the world is used as proof of his amazing power to bring us into a relationship with him.
Yes, that's good too. Ed?
Let us know how much we're being influenced by our culture and teachers maybe and everything else. If we just, like somebody said, we believe other parts of it. We don't believe this because, it's just not popular. We might just kind of say something about ourselves.
Yeah, that's a good point too. Do we have the faith to believe it along with everything else, or are we swayed by the popular opinion in that area? Okay. The biblical account of creation, Genesis 1:1 through 2:25. In reading that, we're not going to read it now, but what do you notice? What do you notice about creation? What stands out? Yes.
Is the evening, or the morning and the evening, how do you justify that? How long that period is if it's not a day?
Okay, so every day of creation is characterized as consisting of an evening and a morning. What else?
How big the overall universe is, and I say some clue because I don't think we even still now with our lovely telescope sitting outside our house, I don't think we really have a good appreciation for just how big God's creation is. But the speed at which things appeared or were created, to me is just completely mind-boggling. I cannot get my hands around how fast he created the earth, the sun, all the heavenly bodies. And they were, and they're in order. I mean, they're working at that point. And they may not have, like in the case of the earth, they may not have animals on them yet. Just an amazing feat. Power.
Word of the universe of the word.
Well, and if you look at how the different animals and things on this planet react, you know, I think that was some of what, after studying, it's amazing how precise everything is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think whenever Job was looking for an answer, we read the last few chapters of Job, and, it, you know, God's trying to get him to understand that. Whenever Job so badly wants an answer to why he's suffering, and God tells him, he said, do you know how the eagle is in the air? Do you know how any of this works? And then Job realizes how small he is and everything, and realizes that he knows nothing compared to God.
Yeah, that gap between what we know and what God knows and maybe what God's revealed to us, I think, is something that comes up in this, because as far as I can tell, we can't precisely say to the year, to the day, how old the earth is. We can maybe make some ballpark conclusions, but there's a lot of things that we just don't know.
Yes. You alluded to it a second ago. God created by seeking. His word has incredible power. And so when we get his word, that has incredible power. And that ties into John 1:1, where it says that in the beginning was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God, speaking about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that ties Jesus all into the creation. So all of that is tied together into God's word.
Okay, good.
What else?
We also need to use a little bit of caution in all this, too. We don't have to have an answer for everything. And it was kind of alluded to with Job. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to defend God or the truth or our faith is not going to come from scientific evidence, you know, always and, right, you know, in every instance. And so if we're, and I'm not saying we're doing this, but a lot of people try to find an answer for every single thing. And there are some things we will never know, or maybe we will know, but it won't be here on this earth. And so, you know, if we're trying to find answers to every single question that we have just for the sake of being able to defend the truth, then maybe our faith is not as strong as we think it is. Mm-hmm. So.
And sometimes we think we know more than we know. I think that comes up a lot when you start looking at mainstream science's view of all this stuff is,
as much as we can look back in history and see where scientific theories have been debunked across time, we still want to look at what we know today and say, we've got it. We got the answer conclusively.
Good for you or not. I mean, that, I think I've heard that 10 different ways since I've been on this earth. So, I mean, if they can't get coffee right, then, I mean, this is big.
Yeah.
You know, a lot bigger than coffee.
So. Yeah.
I think one of the things that stands out is just that the Bible's view is that things were created. They didn't spontaneously happen. It wasn't chance. It wasn't random things coming together. They were created. They were ordered. They were designed. I think that's one of the big things that stands out. And you don't see God, like, sparking this thing, and then it blossoms into everything we see. He creates, and it's fully mature, and it's there. You have people, you have animals, you have plants, you have a planet. It's all there, and it's in a fully mature state at that point. Anything else? Just stands out to you? Okay. So let's move on to Justin Rogers' article, and this gets into that term that was brought up earlier, getting into the semantics of that word day in Genesis 1 and 2, where it talks about day 1, this was created, day 2, this was created, day 3, 4, 5, 6, and then day 7, God rested. Well, how long was that day? What do we know about the meaning of the Hebrew word yom, which is behind that word that's translated into the English as day?
well with our Sunday class about context, really helping to define a word. Apparently that word means day, kind of like our English word day, and it can mean a period of time, or it can mean a distinct day, depending on the context.
Correct. So it's not always meant.
It's not always used for a 24-hour day. It can mean a span of time. It can mean a 24-hour day. The context has to tell us what that is referring to. And we have, you know, there's examples in the Bible of when it's used as 24-hour day. It's also examples of when it's used as a generic span of time. Genesis 39:11 reads, "It came about, or it came to pass about this time." So this time is that word yom. That's the King James and the New King James. The NASB translates it as, "Now it happened one day." So there it's using it as just kind of a generic time. It wasn't a specific day. Genesis 26:18, "And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days," that's that word yom, "of Abraham his father." Just the period of time when Abraham was alive. So there are examples of both. What things within the context tend to indicate when yom is being used literally as a 24-hour day? What?
The account of creation, the first, second, third day, and so on, points out in page three.
The adjectives themselves are limiting, right? Not even the context, just the one word before, the adjective limits. You know, we can see that in multiple examples of day-to-day talk, when different words can mean different things, but when you add an adjective before, then it's very clear what the meaning is intended to be.
Right. The adjectives around the word yom help us understand. Numbers are adjectives, so that limits it. What else do we have in Genesis 1 that clues us into whether yom is being used literally or figuratively? Hint, we've already talked about it. Evening and morning. To me, that was the thing that made it really clear to me was, okay, this is talking about a 24-hour day, at least in Genesis 1. It talks about first, second, third, fourth, but it's also evening, morning. That makes up what it's calling a day. Where in Genesis 1 and 2 can we see yom used figuratively, where it's not that specific 24-hour day? Okay. Genesis 2, 4, "This is the account of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made earth and heaven." How do we know that's not referring to a 24-hour day?
That it was 7 days.
Okay. So if it was a literal 24-hour day in 2:4, that would contradict with, well, no, creation took place across 6 days.
Okay. So yes, that goes well with David's recent class, Bible 101. Any other places in that Genesis 1 and 2 where it's used figuratively? Okay. "The Lord God commanded the man, saying, from any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat from it, you will surely die." How do we know this is figurative? Okay. They didn't die the very day they ate it. So we know that's a figurative usage. Other things to look at. As I mentioned earlier, the days of creation in Genesis 1, they're referenced in other places of Scripture. In Exodus 20:11, who's speaking here and what's brought up relating to the creation days?
honor the Sabbath day and not work on that Sabbath day, would that mean 8 Sabbaths in a row? I mean, obviously it wouldn't work.
Okay. So this was to honor the Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week. Why are they supposed to honor that day? It says because God rested. It parallels it with the six and the 6 days of creation, and then the seventh day that God rested. So in both discussions there, where it's talking about the days of creation and then the days of their week, where they're supposed to observe the Sabbath day, the Hebrew word behind all of that is yom. So it's the same word throughout. And so it shows us a connection there that they were to understand that, okay, you're going to work 6 days of your week. That's six cycles of morning and evening, morning and evening, morning and evening. And then that last seventh cycle in the week, you're going to rest because God rested on that seventh day. So it connects those two. And then Mark 10:6. How does this come into play here? What's the context here? Did I say Mark 10? Mark 10:6.
Okay. Well, first, when I read the worksheet, I thought you had a typo. I didn't understand the reference to Mark 10:6, but then I got to look at the word beginning. Is that what you're looking at? In the beginning, you did this.
Yes. Okay. So this isn't actually, I guess this isn't actually connecting to that word yom. So maybe that was a little deceptive.
Jesus is, of course, it's a discussion of divorce. But he's going back to the beginning. At the beginning, he made a mouth. So if there's a theory that, you know, there were billions and billions of years, and then human life evolved,
yes,
this, that would be hard to reconcile with Mark 10.
Correct. Sorry, I got a little deceptive. So yeah, no, that was the connection that was meant to be made there, is that Jesus says, in the beginning of the creation, there's man, not there's this tremendous span of time, and then humans come on the scene. So that's a distinct difference from what a lot of creation theories will propose today. Yes?
When he was there.
That's true, too.
In the beginning, he was there. Okay. So the God described in the Bible, could he create the world, create humans, everything in it, in six literal 24-hour days? Ed?
I was just going to make one other comment about Genesis 1.
Okay.
I don't know. Tell me if this makes sense. But let's see. First, it creates the plants. And then the next day... puts the lights out, I mean, you know, in the universe. So if that was billions of years, the plants would have to live without light. It sounds like to me.
Well, he created light and darkness on the first day.
I'm not sure how that existed until the fourth day, but...
Then the lights ruled the day, and that's sort of the night, maybe the stars. Anyway,
I don't
know. Yeah. So I guess that could be possible. Okay. Off of that, we now know about some, probably a very small amount, of the systems that where you have to have certain animals, certain things for plants to pollinate and carry on. Mm-hmm. If it was that long, animals and plants on the same day, unless I'm mistaken. You couldn't have had that long period of time.
Yeah, and we get into some of that in later classes around mutualism and symbiosis and those types of things, where you have these seemingly very intricate
interdependent relationships between a plant and an animal or something, and if they came about billions of years between each other, how would they have survived? So.
To Ed's point, there was light, but there's evening and morning, so if you go through like 5 billion days of day light and then 5 billion years of darkness for your evening and morning, you have plants trying to survive for a long time during the night with no light. So he brings up a good objection.
Going off the plants, I think it's a really, like, it's very distinct that it said that there's seed-bearing plants that bear fruit, because someone could argue, oh, there were plants first, oh, it was algae and moss and stuff like that, but the fact that it's fruit-bearing and they have seeds is very distinctive and important for us to notice.
Okay, I hadn't thought of that.
Okay, so I think we can agree the God of the Bible could create the world, could create everything in it in 6 24-hour days. Could the God described in the Bible create the earth across billions of years? Could being the key word. Yeah, he could.
Yes. All right.
Time to mention, we are bound by time. God is an eternal being. He is not bound by time. And I think sometimes that's where people get tripped up with what's called theistic evolution, thinking, well, God just couldn't do it that fast. God is not bound, and we keep trying to limit God, it seems, many times in what man thinks he understands and then tries to explain, oh, this is how it happened. But we're forgetting we're dealing with our abilities and our own understanding. It is nowhere near Jehovah God.
I really wonder
if we ever come, you know, in the afterlife, come to understand what timelessness is, how much our paradigm on this world will change, just because it's so hard for us that we can't really grasp that. A lot of what we're going to look at is what's the evidence around which of these we should believe. That's more what we're focused on. Okay, so let's talk about some about the biblical record and what we can maybe know about the age of the earth. What I proposed in the study guide here was to put together what evidence we do have in the scriptures that give us a clue as to how old the earth might be and try to piece that together into an estimation. You know, we have records of genealogies, we have a starting point, we know where Jesus was born, different things like that. What can we kind of hone in from that? Did anybody piece that together? What did you find? Anything interesting? Somebody tried it. I know somebody did.
Years from creation to Abraham,
okay,
based on Genesis 5 and 11, like you have here.
Okay.
Then, based on the text of the Bible and some secular extra biblical evidence, it was about that much longer until Jesus was born.
4,000 years.
And then, of course, we count our years approximately from that time.
Okay, that's the easy part. That puts us at just over 6,000.
How would you start, like, what things would you look at? What things did you pull together from the scriptures to piece it together? I proposed a few things. There might be others. Okay, you're being really quiet. Let's look at a few things. We have, so in Genesis 11, we have a starting of a good record of person by person by person. Here's how long they lived. Here's how long they lived before they had their next offspring. So you can pretty much walk generation by generation through that piece of it in Genesis 11. I'll show that here in a minute. And then there's kind of a gap, and you have to make some assumptions. But in Matthew 1 and in Luke, you have Jesus' lineage, and it traces it back in one case to Abraham, in another case back to Adam, back to the beginning. We're not given years between those generations, and we have to make some assumptions to put time frames between them, but at least it gives us something to go on in terms of walking back that lineage. What's the difference between those two genealogies, Matthew's list and Luke's list?
Joseph's lineage, I believe, and Luke's is Mary's.
Correct. So Matthew's lineage traces Jesus' father, Joseph, back to David and then Abraham. And Luke's traces his mother's back to Adam. Is Mary named in Luke's genealogy? You might look at that. Is not.
The word son used there could also mean in-law.
Correct. That's what I've seen as well, is that apparently Hebrew had no word for son-in-law, and when the word that they used for son of, there were like four different ways you could use it. One was a literal son. One was you're a distant descendant of this person, so you're a son of. One is son-in-law, and so that's how it walked. It went from Joseph to Heli, and essentially Joseph was Heli's son-in-law. Heli was Mary's father. So that's how it walked through it. Oh, why the difference? Why does Matthew list one track and Luke list the other? So, tracing it through his father shows his legal right to inherit David's throne. Tracing it through his mother says, oh, he has a blood right, a blood connection now to David. Because he wasn't a biological child of Joseph. He was a biological child of Mary, though. Okay. So, this is a snapshot of what I put together. I've got it, you know, built out in a spreadsheet, but I tried to put it into something I can put on a PowerPoint slide. So starting in Genesis 5, 7, 11, these sources down here, you can walk through kind of time frame by time frame, generation to generation. And so here we have creation and Adam. And what I've got is this is tabulating the age of the earth from zero being at creation. This is trying to track back, okay, what is that like in years BC, where zero is Jesus was born and you know, back up. So zero, we have creation. Let's see, Noah, he comes on the scene about 1056. And then you have the flood 600 years later, so we're at 1656. And you can look at some of the other names that we're familiar with. You get down here to Nahor and Terah. And then Abraham, so here we are almost 2,000 years from creation. I think that's what Wyatt cited a minute ago. Isaac, and then we continue on. So when we get to Jacob, we don't, at least I haven't found clear tracers to say how old Jacob was when, like, Judah was born or Perez was born. And so the assumption that I'm using here is a statement from Genesis 6:3 where God says, I'm not going to let man live forever, okay? They're going to live 120 years. And so I just applied that, and that probably extends this out further than it should, because Jacob may not have been 120 years when Judah was born. So it gives us kind of a maximum. But this traces us down to, we get to Jesse at 3308. And then you have David. At David, we have some clear markers. He was 70 years old when Solomon began to reign, 40 years old when Rehoboam began to reign, 18 years he reigned, and then Abijah, 3 years he reigned, and then Asa. And then I switched my average lifespan assumption based on Psalm 90:10, and I need to go back and look at that, because I didn't notice until today that Psalm 90:10 is couched as a prayer of Moses, where Moses is saying, well, man's lifespan is 70 to 80 years. So I averaged that and said 75 between generations. But I may need to back that up, starting somewhere further back than I have. But you keep walking that down through the lineage that we have in Matthew 1, and that takes us to today being 7,307 years past creation. Again, that's not precise. It's ballpark. If you do it, so that's if you follow Matthew's genealogy. Luke's genealogy has more people in it. And if you track that one, it gets you to around 8,600 years for the age of the earth. So a little bit of difference. What's the main takeaway from this whole exercise? What?
To continue on your point on the table, mm-hmm. One marker you could use is Cyrus's proclamation that the Jews could return from exile.
Okay.
To figure out when that would have been. It's given as the first year of his reign.
Okay.
And then you could go backwards through the kings to figure out roughly when that would have been.
This isn't exact. Why is this exercise helpful? Or is it? I think it is. Yeah. We're in the ballpark of thousands, guys, not billions, okay? That's a big narrowing of the field, okay? And I think that's important. Now, we've gone through that estimation. What assumptions underlie that estimation, though? I think this is important to do with every argument, every proposition that someone presents. You want to know what assumptions they made to get there. I see a hand here.
If this is what you're looking for this particular question, but
okay.
You've already stated earlier that God made this world ready to go. Mm-hmm. So how old was it ready to go? We don't know.
And that will play into later discussions.
That was an aha moment for me.
What the dates are, right. And we're filling in the blanks, and we need to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
The ways that son of could be interpreted as a descendant of,
mm-hmm.
And so perhaps in some of these cases there are generations between the folks listed, and that would expand the timeline somewhat.
Absolutely.
Didn't hear him. Joel said that there may be gaps between the markers we have in genealogy, so it could be longer than what we know. What else?
Well, you're starting with the biblical text, so you're assuming the biblical text is accurate.
Yes, that's why I did the list. That's a good one.
Field, but you're also assuming that time and years are the same all the time.
Okay.
Are there some indications now that some astronomical constants and stuff change slightly over time?
Okay.
Which means that some of that could be variable.
Okay.
But I wouldn't name my house.
Okay.
So I'll list the ones that I had, and we've already covered some of these. First, we're assuming the days of creation were literal 24-hour days, and we're not assuming that without reason, but we are assuming that. There are no gaps in the genealogies. Joel mentioned that. And then we've talked about how I'm using average lifespan as a marker between father and son, father and son. So we're likely, assuming there are no gaps in the genealogies, we're likely stretching it out even a little bit from what it actually was. Let me see. Okay. That was all I had for this lesson. Anything else y'all noticed about age of the earth from the biblical perspective? Anything else you want to bring up? That's one of the other things about this. And maybe I'll talk a little bit about this. You know, I'll explain why the homework. Okay, the homework is there because I'm not an expert on this, and I'm expecting you to learn with me, and I'm expecting you to help me learn. And so, I'm sharing more than I am teaching. So help me out. If you know more about something, bring it up. If you see something I've got wrong, let me know. We're gonna learn together, Ed.
Observe is animals and things and plants even going extinct. Like, so it kind of implies, I mean, everything that points to there was a beginning and that there's fewer now versus we're getting more all the time.
Oh, like we're continuing to develop new and more and more.
We don't see that at all. What we see is apparently there was a beginning of all. Some are still here and some aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Daniel?
According to the scriptures, the world was started and populated twice. And that was done in thousands of years. And that was done twice. If the earth is an old earth and humans and animals were here for millions of years, or I don't know what the scientific claim is for how long humans have been here, but the sustainability of what we have as the earth could not sustain a growing population of animals and humans for that long.
Okay, I see.
So I mean, it was populated fully twice in thousands of years. Mm-hmm. If it were millions of years, the earth couldn't sustain that type of growth.
This is more of like observation and like kind of looking at articles sometimes about this stuff. It seems like people who don't want to acknowledge God or believe God is, or they have to say millions and billions of years. Because if they don't, then they have to acknowledge creation. You have to acknowledge the Creator. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, people are always going to choose that billions and billions of years, even though there are no fossils to prove that evolution and things like that like, directly. And they have to make us seem like animals in that sense.
From when I
look
at articles about this, I just
noticed
that.
Yeah,
we'll see more and more of that as we go through the class.
Yeah, it's time, it's chance. That seems to be what they hang the arguments on for. Well, God couldn't have created or didn't create. This was all time and chance. And one of the best explanations I ever heard to kind of, in a very finite way, wrap our minds around that. There was a gospel preacher got up one time with a bag and a stopwatch he had taken apart. This is back in the days of the mechanical world. He had taken the whole thing apart, or it broke, I don't know how he got it all apart. And he said, in this bag I've got all these parts, and so we're going to take a long time, and one of these statistical chances, and he had figured out what it was based on the number of parts, I'm going to keep checking this bag, letting it roll off the podium. And one of these times, when it rolls down the floor, it's going to fully assemble itself and be keeping time. And be fully wound.
Right.
He said, do you really think that can happen given enough time and enough chance? Does anyone here really think that's when you look at the world around us, she's perfectly wound, she's perfectly set on the right time for everything to happen and to interact. If you give it enough time and enough chances, you really think all that we see, especially now that even when that was done, we didn't have the telescopes in space, all right. That was done too,
right.
It becomes something maybe only God can imagine because he's the one that did it.
Okay. They're coming in, so I'll let you go. Thanks for participating. We'll pick it up with the second lesson next week.